Brad runs his own landscaping business.
Yeah, with my two brothers.
They take their business very seriously.
Sure do.
Fred traded up to commercial auto insurance from GEICO for serious customized coverage that grows as his business does, all for seriously low rates.
All right, so when's it gonna happen? You know, the big GEICO surprise?
I'm sorry?
Some hair metal band. Are they gonna jump out of those bushes?
No, this is a serious GEICO ad.
That pyro was pretty cool, though.
Get more with GEICO Commercial Insurance. Trade up today at geico.com/commercial.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And it's here. It's time for Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Very well. Shame the Ravens weren't able to notch the victory over the Steelers on Sunday. Game and a half behind now. But the race for the division certainly isn't over. And I'm very much looking forward to the Monday night showdown between the Harbaugh brothers.
Very painful loss in terms of the possibility of winning a tiebreaker versus the Steelers, because they now have to do it by a division games or outright them. I guess either is possible. The Steelers have mostly division games left. It's a tough road to hoe. That said, the Ravens are almost certainly going to be in the playoffs. They'll go as a wild card if they don't win the division. And, hope is not lost. From that perspective, the Ravens have been a very good playoff team in the past when they played on the road. I don't know that this team is exactly that type of team. That team, the team that had a lot of the success, was very defense-based.
Yes, but the Ravens have traditionally, I believe they have the best road playoff record of any team in the NFL. Yep. I think you put that out earlier this week. A high-octane offense can make up for a lot of flaws. So hopefully that offense continues to shine. They hit some explosives against Pittsburgh, primarily outside the hashes, and that's the place where I believe they need to focus, because there are a few teams that have the defensive personnel to both bottle up the run game and also prevent completions from the middle of the field. So by improvement from Lamar, improvement from the offensive line, and from the receivers, a three-pronged strategy to hopefully be prepared for the postseason run.
All right. Big changes to the secondary are probably the story of the week here. Now, we went over a lot of this on the defensive pod. Doesn't mean we can't talk about it again, but Marcus Williams obviously now seems to be relegated to a backup role, while Eddie Jackson did not travel with the team. How would you see their roles going forward?
I thought it was good that Marcus was engaged on the sideline. I believe with the Kyle Hamilton and Ardarius Washington moving forward, at least they earned another game to be the primary two, but you need two or three, as you often say, three to make two. So I think Marcus is going to be a backup, and maybe, depending on matchup, hopefully reinserted into the lineup at some point. Eddie Jackson seems that his path and his position on the team is tenuous at this point. We'll have to see how that goes in the coming weeks, but still need depth there. Even if they found their two long-term starters or starters for the rest of the season, you still need depth there.
Yeah, really kind of is showing out now how having two special teams only safeties, and that appears what Kane and Braid are, is really hurting the team. We're going to get into the signing of Desmond King and what that means in just a little bit. I obviously signed to a practice squad, so they didn't have to get rid of one of their existing defensive backs, but it's still a difficult situation there. Let's move on to cornerback, where Stevens and White, they weren't in rotation. White was actually only used in dime packages for the first three quarters. Then he took over for Stevens in the fourth quarter for the two main drives. Stevens actually came back and was on the field for the last three plays of the last three. They were five plays, including some kneels, but the last three plays that were meaningful in the game for Pittsburgh.
Certainly good to see Tre'Davious White make an impact with a few pass defenses in the end zone. Brendan Stevens also had a pass defense when he turned his head around for maybe one of the first times this season. I believe they should utilize a rotation at that right cornerback spot. And I actually have been – I'm a proponent of the four cornerback dime alignment, depending on who you're playing against, obviously. But Stevens could have some matchup ability potentially against tight ends with his physicality and size. So I expect both of them to earn a pretty good snap share moving forward.
That is the kind of a new idea, and we did see some of Stevens on the inside in that dime package that I think would make sense. The four-corner dime, not something that is typically used in the NFL these days. Almost all teams use a three-safety, three-corner dime, and you want a slot defender and generally a big-bodied guy playing that weak side linebacker role. The Ravens just have, you know, lined it up a little bit differently, and they're going man up on four players. The only thing I don't like about it is that you're kind of tipping off your man coverage or quarters that you want to run, and then you still have issues. Even if you think man coverage is the way you want to play, you still have issues with the zone concepts behind that, and the safeties need to be making smart decisions about where they need to go. And of course, all of offense is about trying to make those safeties make bad decisions about where they go.
Right.
Literally the passing game. That's exactly what it's designed around. So
for a team that has struggled tremendously against the pass, I think putting more speed on the field and more players that are, you know, have experience covering, you know, as their primary role is better.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think the Ravens, to the degree there will be some additional runs given up because of it. And I don't think it'll be a lot, by the way, because usually the run pass decision is pretty clear by the time you're in dime. Mm-hmm. But to the degree there's a little bit of run defense given up, I think this team can afford a little bit of that. What they really can't afford is to be continuously beaten on the pass. So we'll see how prevalent this becomes as a package. It may be very prevalent as you go forward, or there may be still more mutation of this defense to happen.
A lot of it depends on the injuries too. I mean, you have to, obviously the players that are available, you have to tailor your game plan to the players that are available.
Yeah. They are one injury away from not knowing what the hell they're doing, obviously, in the secondary, and obviously another injury at safety. I'm sure they have a plan. I'm sure they know who the next guy up is. It might be a return to Marcus Williams for starters, but I'm not sure it's anything they really want to have any reasonable possibility of occurring. So
not sure.
Lack of special teams players generally probably mean that players like Kane, Braid, and JAD, who I don't see on the field, you know, as guys who they would want on the field otherwise, will continue to get activations. Is it comfortable? Is it okay? Is it comfortable is not the right word. Is it practical to carry three players like that? Maybe I'm overstating the JAD situation because, you know, all kinds of coach speak before the season about how JAD was playing at a starter level, which frankly, I didn't see at all this summer. Mm-hmm. Did not see it at all. Same problems is all about not being able to look back and find the ball. But that's a lot of players to carry that you really don't want to put on the field. I liked it when they had Cooper active for one game. Mm-hmm. He was, of course, released as part of the Desmond King signing. I guess Desmond King could be the new guy that they elevate three times and then perhaps bring up the 53.
Yeah, I mean, we've been adamantly against, I would say, on this series, mm-hmm. about not dressing too many special teams guys. But Kane looked like, and we'll get to the injury report, but it looked like it could potentially be a more severe injury. As far as those three, JAD, Bo Braid, and Sanusi Kane, I believe both JAD and Bo Braid potentially have some developmental, maybe not JAD because he's getting older, but he can play defense to some extent. Not mm-hmm. going to play at an all-star level, but not going to necessarily be have the bullseye on his back. And I think that extends to linebackers as well. Christian Welch has been elevated several times now, and Chris Board is essentially a special teams only player, although he's logged maybe three or four snaps this season.
Yeah, it's been interesting when they've used him, and unfortunately, it might be significant again this next game. But they've used Board in some obvious passing situations in dime as the lone inside linebacker when mm-hmm. Roquan wasn't around, so that was that is a new role. He'd actually done some of that, I want to say, in his first stint with the Ravens.
Yes, he did. And he was a player that was often targeted on third and long and gave up completions. So I was actually happy to see him go when he left. But it is what it is.
All right. Well, Desmond King, let's talk about him briefly. 30 years old on December 14th. He did play well last year, and it's interesting that nobody has tried to give him a shot to date so far, because last year he allowed under 6 yards per target playing slot corner, which is pretty darn good. And what was his passer rating against last year? Because that was also pretty good. 91.5 I'm seeing last year. He's not the player I'm thinking of. Did have 6 penalties in 230 coverage snaps, which if you had to point to one thing, that would be a not good thing about his record last year.
Agreed. He's been a player that carved out a nice career for himself, long been rumored as a fit for the Ravens, particularly by one of our buddies, Garnet West. I think, frankly, the Ravens are now thin at slot corner, probably was the deepest position on the team coming out of training camp. You have Arthur Mollett battling injury. You have your other two primary slot corner options in Kyle Hamilton and Darius Washington, now essentially full-time safeties on the back end, and Marlon Humphrey, who's the other one, but you know he's obviously not going to only play in the slot, I don't think, unless something happens. So I'm intrigued by this. This fits the mold of a Ravens DaCosta signing that comes to Baltimore, carves out a niche, and produces some good play for the team.
Yeah, it could be right on the heels of Tre'Davious White. It could be that kind of signing. At least I hope so. Mm-hmm. Probably not a long-term Raven at this age, but you never know. He could be the kind of guy, if he plays well in a few games here, you sign him for another year or two, even as a you know a special teams player who can help you as a backup as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All right, I'll ask you one more question about the safety before we move on. I don't think this was in the mailbag, so we're not stepping on anybody's toes here. What's the next move for the Ravens if there's an injury to either Ardarius or, God forbid, to Hamilton, to either of them? It would be a God forbid situation.
I think you have to go back to Marcus Williams. I don't see a whole lot of other choices. I haven't given up on Marcus Williams' ability to help this team. It's been a very tough season for him, but it's a week-to-week league, as they say, and maybe he can put it together if forced into duty again.
Okay, I mean, I think that's probably the way they will go. I think that the impetus is going to be very high for them to move Brandon Stevens if there's another injury. So I think it might be – they've done that in-game before, moved him to safety. So I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up moving to the back end if that were to happen. But there, it shows you how thin you can get and how quickly in the NFL, because the Ravens obviously had a lot of bodies at these positions, and just the failure of Williams and Jackson is a big part of them having to, you know, move on from people. It's weird that it's not injury related really for this team so far.
Made this point before, but the loss of Denard Wilson is seemingly having an impact on the safety play in particular this year.
Yeah. All right, let's roll on, talk about the injury report.
Certainly.
Take us through that.
All right, so this is as of Thursday evening. Nelson Agholor did not practice on Thursday with an illness. Kyle Hamilton logged a full practice with a neck injury. They're listed as a neck injury, maybe on that high-flying tackle of Najee Harris. Maybe he suffered that one. Justice Hill, and this is news, is in the concussion protocol. So he may not be available to play on Monday, although he will have an extra day. Travis Jones, DNP with the ankle. Sanusi Kane, also DNP with an ankle. Arthur Mollett did not practice with a calf injury. Roquan Smith did not practice with a hamstring injury. And Odafe Owe logged a full practice after suffering another neck injury.
All right, so let's address a couple of those. First of all, Odafe Owe played just 3 of the last 22 snaps in a game where the Ravens were really trying to get it done against the Steelers there at the end. That was very concerning to me to see him as a full practice on Thursday. And this is the first practice of the week, remember, because they have a Monday game. Normally that would be Wednesday, I think is good news. I'm looking at both Mollett and Kane, and they're either of them could be headed to IR potentially, but neither of them has been put there, which probably says good things about each of their injury status. Would you take it that way?
I think so. I mean, they sometimes they put this year a couple of times. I think they put players on IR on Friday or even Saturday. I would expect potentially one of them to go. Obviously, I'm not privy to the medical records, but I think also with the ability to elevate a Desmond King from the practice squad and let him play, maybe that alleviates the need to make that roster space right now.
Okay. I mean, they're not a team that has a ton of walking wounded that are on the periphery of the roster. So the 2023 Ravens, like two games in, had a complete stash of players who were not able to play, but they didn't really want to put on IR. Now they've got, you know, they've got a couple of players, but they don't have a whole bunch of players who are in that same position right now. I guess Justice Hill would be a really significant one if he can't play. Right now, he's getting close to 50% of the snaps at running back. What do you think the Ravens look like in the backfield if Justice Hill all of a sudden can't go?
I think you see more of Derrick Henry in pass protection, and I think you'd hypothetically see more of Keaton Mitchell in the third down role. And they may going to go to Rasheen Ali. I'm a little bit surprised he's still on the roster at this point, but maybe this is the reason why you're carrying four when Keaton's still getting back up to speed. And obviously with this new injury to Justice, Owe, certainly good to see him back full, coming off perhaps his best game as a professional. Big one, obviously, is Roquan. Roquan with the hamstring. Roquan's been up and down this season, turned in a fine game, one of his probably his best game of the year. Maybe not an all-pro level game last week, but his best game of the year. You want him, you want your inside linebackers healthy, your best inside linebackers healthy going against a Greg Roman offense in particular.
Yep. That's a very good point. And Harrison probably is not ideal personally, and then it may be a little bit less than a player like Trenton Simpson has to read off if Roquan is not there, which would concern me that it might hurt his production too. Also, maybe a case where if Harrison is on the field, and this is why they might go to board on third down again anyway, he really limits you from a pass defense capability. But Simpson may have to be asked to do more pass defense that will expose some of the things about him that we honestly, we haven't seen too much of one way or another so far, but we could see things we really don't want to see if he's asked to take on more of a role.
I prefer to see Simpson, let him cut his teeth in that if he has to, Roquan's deactivated and he has to play the dime backer, the single linebacker and dime. I still think Simpson gives you your best case. He's made some good plays in coverage, has a pretty solid coverage grade last I checked. And I really don't have a whole lot of confidence in Chris Board to handle really any defensive responsibility. So I would prefer to see Simpson. Maybe there's going to be a learning curve, but rather better have that done now and be prepared for, you know, down the stretch and into the postseason.
Right. Hopefully this is resolved by the postseason, but you never know. Things could be worse and even more dire. Travis Jones, to me, still an enormous injury. Obviously, Michael Pierce still not back. We don't really have any word. Harbaugh gave a kind of a terse, salty answer the last time he was asked about Michael Pierce, which I think was might have been on Monday, might have been last week. I'm not sure which it was, about when, you know, he was eligible to come off after this next game kind of thing. And Harbaugh's like, I'll let you know when he's there kind of thing.
He's playing through it. I mean, he's a big man playing through it. I certainly don't blame the team for getting him off his feet during the week, during practices. But, you know, he's a key linchpin of the defensive success for this season for sure, and the pass rush. So, you know, hope it would be nice if you had the bye week maybe 2 weeks earlier this year. Come this time of year, 2.5 months in, coming off one of the hardest hitting games I can recall in recent memory against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You got lots of guys banged up and nursing things, but you got to push through.
Yeah. I do think this is a game where they need to make sure they have five to start the game. If I can accept five, including Jones, I can't accept four, including Jones, particularly against the Chargers. I actually don't think they would do that. And it might even be a game, you know, Greg Roman's on offense, you might see a lot of sixth offensive linemen. They're certainly very familiar with what the Ravens do. It wouldn't even shock me if they dressed Jones plus five. Which would be a fairly extreme reaction to the situation, but not necessarily unwarranted at all. It's certainly a team in gut heavy. They just saw what Pittsburgh did in this game. And obviously, once Travis Jones got hurt, a lot of the pass rush was much less effective. They had all four of their sacks were before Jones got hurt in this game.
Exactly. Yes, I'm certainly on board with that. You could bring up both of Wormley and Tupou still has one more, right?
Yeah, Tupou.
He has one left. So, yeah, that's you can make room. You can, deactivate Kane. Only just five wideouts potentially, and tell Tucker to kick all the kickoffs in the end zone and hope that you're okay on punt coverage.
Yeah. It's honestly the sacrifices on special teams are relatively small relative to the risk. As we've said so many times, I don't mean to hurt people's eardrum with it again. Still have Tampa and Hardy sitting on IR as well as Pierce. No new news on when they'll be back. But the Ravens this year are in a better position in terms of using their IR DTRs. So the Ravens do have some more ability to put new people in IR who might come back, and a player like Rasheen Ali or Tez Walker even might fit into that category. But they haven't used their IR DTRs anyway if they wanted to do more of that.
I believe there are four, and I meant to double check that, and I ran out of time in preparation for the show, but I believe there are four, and it's a maximum of eight. So considering that we're, getting to the end of November, that should be able to carry them through the season without,
easily
impinging, right, without harming the roster.
I mean, they only have three guys who are set to return or even possible to return, and they don't really need Hardy. So if they decide that they
Miles here is an electrician running wiring for this new home build.
Good morning.
Miles doesn't have time for funny business.
I guess.
Miles traded up to Sirius Commercial Auto Insurance from GEICO for customized coverage that grows with his business, all for seriously low rates.
So where's the GEICO surprise cameo?
Come again?
Like some big famous football player or something. He's going to bust through that wall, isn't he?
No, this ad is serious business.
Guys, get over here. You got to see this.
No, there's nothing funny over here. Sorry.
Get more with GEICO Commercial Insurance. Trade up today at geico.com/commercial.
They really want to return only Tampa and Pierce. And we don't have a good sense of how serious Tampa or Pierce's injuries are right now. It could be that they're season ending that we just haven't heard. But you have to take off 4 weeks. So if anybody goes on IR now, they have to be out a while. So we're getting to the point of no return in terms of use it or lose it IR DTRs.
Yep, completely agree.
All right. Let's talk about the next transactions to make space. I would put up there at the top of this group right now, after what we saw happen the last week, that Eddie Jackson is probably set for release at the first need for a roster spot. The way I would stratify it is Eddie Jackson first, then Ali probably as a cut and attempt to re-sign. But I did that before I heard about the concussion protocol for Justice Hill. So that might have to be changed.
I would put Sanusi Kane to IR up pretty high as well. Mm-hmm. Eddie Jackson, sort of a make or break time. Maybe he gets back in the coach's good graces and it serves as a depth role. But if he's another stay home, don't even bother coming on the trip, the writing's on the wall pretty much. But I think Kane to IR makes some sense as well.
Okay. With Jackson, a couple things really showed out about what happened. Obviously, it's very clear from the actions before and after that this was not a significant health problem within the family, say, or a period of mourning or somebody else,
paternity,
all of those things that it potentially could have been. This was a performance and we're pissed off at him about something. And the comments were salty, but done via Twitter. So you can't direct it beforehand, but they don't have personal reasons. They had non-injury reasons is the big distinction there. And then afterwards, Harbaugh basically refused to comment on it in a positive way. And, I assume he's at practice because he's not on the injury report now. He's still a member of the team and he's not on the injury report. But that doesn't mean that I think that the Ravens are ready to put him back on the field. And based on what Harbaugh has said about these are the two going forward kind of thing, I think he's made it very clear to both Williams and Jackson they're very dissatisfied with the play. So I would expect this is the end of Jackson. I don't think he'll play another. If I had a bet, I'd say he wouldn't play another snap for the Ravens defensively. He very well, very likely should be a player that they use on special teams. I would say the same for Marcus Williams, by the way. You're short of punt coverage, guys. I don't know why Marcus Williams isn't out there. Probably hasn't played special teams in quite a while, but he's a guy you can use.
Right, and they have the injury insurance on his contract as well. It's another reason to play him on special teams. So, sure. I mean, I've taken that stance regardless. Do what's best for the team, whatever I can do to help the team. And it is interesting that Harbaugh, when Ben Cleveland wasn't getting much traction, Harbaugh said he expressed confidence in him. Same with Marcus Williams. Eddie Jackson, not so much. So, then again, optimistic view. The 2012 Baltimore Ravens had a mutiny in November, late November, early December, and ended up winning the Super Bowl. So sometimes a little bit of competitive spirit and adversity, you could call it, is helpful eventually.
Yeah, that team was remarkable, too, in terms of going from a position where they looked like they were destroyed in terms of their defensive back situation and actually having it recover kind of on its own without a lot of outside intervention. I mean, Corey Graham ended up playing great for them, and Kerry Williams, So they really
stepped up.
They came back and they had a good secondary. Even players like Pollard ended up being quite useful to that team.
Yeah, right, he would have been exploited in coverage this day.
Yes, he wouldn't be the guy to fix this defense. Let's move on and talk some mailbag questions. I got a few, maybe we take them one at a time here, but I'll ask them, you answer them. DW Drummer 99 says, what are the cap implications of releasing Marcus Williams in 2025?
Marcus Williams is under contract through 2026 currently. If he is released after the season, there is $13.45 million in dead money versus $5.3 million in cap savings. So this is a deal that I don't believe he's been restructured. So I believe it was a little bit backloaded originally. So you're looking at almost 2.5 to 1 as far as dead money versus cap savings.
Yeah, I think he might have been restructured once because I see he has consecutive $1 million salaries in 22 and 23. But you're right. And I think he's at a point where I would be surprised if he's a Raven next year. If you want me to put a percentage chance on that, I'd say, 10 or 12% right now. It would take a confluence of circumstances, an injury. He plays well, and then probably still a restructuring of that contract where he makes less, because I wouldn't see otherwise a reason to keep him around for $5 million.
Yeah. OTC currently values his play at under $2 million per season. He's making $14 a year, I believe. And it would be something like the Ronnie Stanley deal where he takes off the last year and takes a haircut, but he would probably have to take more than the haircut Ronnie took, more like a 60-70% haircut, I believe.
Yeah.
If you're not on the field, why are you making that kind of money, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the people say, well, $14 million, why are we paying that? Well, we already paid that. The bulk of the $14 million we already paid, the $9 million effectively of that has already been paid. So there's nothing to be done about that. That's all advance money. So it's only a matter of this $5.3 million and how much of it that they would like to pay Marcus for next year.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Let's go on to another question here from ABITS, and that's at Bolt Boost. I would love your thoughts on how in-depth an overhaul the secondary needs this coming off season. What do these moves look like? Whether it's position changes, player addition, or subtractions, new contracts offered, and how much draft capital is invested.
So on a bright side, Marlon Humphrey certainly righted his stock this season, probably the best player on defense. You also have Nate Wiggins, who's had a little bit of an up-and-down rookie year, but I think you can pencil him in as a boundary or field-side cornerback in his second year. And you have Kyle Hamilton, who's still one of the best safeties in the league, even if he hasn't made quite as many impact plays. So that's three-fifths there. Your nickel corner is somebody – I have a lot of confidence in the Ravens to find a quality nickel corner, whether that's through a late-round pick, a UDFA, a journeyman from another team, or an in-house development. But I do think that you need to make a significant investment at the free safety position, whether that is through the draft, which I would say a top 100 pick, maybe a day two pick, or a mid-level veteran signing.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of that. I didn't hear right corner, by the way, addressed there, but I'll get to that. So Brett Hammonds also had the question about what's Ardarius Washington's status. Ardarius is in his third year now, so he'll be a restricted free agent next year. So the Ravens, I'm certain, will tender him. I think what they'll probably do is try and extend him right now, try and figure out a way, a price that's reasonable, probably for a three-year extension that would continue on and keep Washington here for the next several years. He's become very valuable, and I'm not disagreeing with the notion that they should go out and get another safety. I'm saying Washington has potential value to them in terms of versatility and playing front or back. We'll see the rest of the season if Ardarius really looks like he's a guy who might hold that role for longer. If so, that would be a big win for the Ravens. But I think absolutely they need a ball hawk center fielder that they're going to need to get. So normally the number of players who really fit that role is pretty darn slim.
Yeah.
If you go back years for the Ravens, they've been pretty good at signing some guys. Eric Weddle was a good signing. Marcus Williams, not so much, but he was pretty good, at least in the first 2 years on a per snap basis. I can't make a good signing out of it. I can't do that. But I didn't think it was a bad signing at the time. The Earl Thomas signing was a disaster.
I'll push back on it a little bit. I thought he had a good first year. I think his first year is underrated. Spray charts showed quarterbacks were avoiding him. He made a Pro Bowl. And the Ravens' coverage against tight ends was exceptional that year. I don't have it in front of me, but I would venture that that's the best year they've had covering tight ends of the last – since Ed Reed. I would say that.
Okay. Well, fair enough. And it doesn't – we don't have to paint Earl Thomas as a complete loser or a big winner either way. It didn't work out because he didn't want to be around the team the second year and would rather wash his car, as the story goes, than be at a meeting. But I do think that the Ravens need to really invest draft capital at the free safety position, because it's Kyle Hamilton is being forced into a role that is reducing his value. Mm-hmm. And I think that they would unlock incremental value if they could get a Xavier McKinney type in this draft. Mm-hmm. That, by the way, you know, seeing Xavier McKinney being second in the NFL in interceptions right now, with Humphrey third and I forget who's first, but he's got six interceptions. He's had an outstanding career. In fact, his career passer rating against, according to PFF, which, by the way, there are some questions about how they assign targets that might not be entirely true, but it doesn't damage the contention here. Career quarterback rating against is 59.1.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Ed Reed was 70. Yeah.
Wow. You were very high on him on the draft. I wasn't quite as high as you were, and you nailed that one. I thought he had maybe some athletic limitations that certainly haven't hindered his play at the professional level. Anyway, back to the question about Ardarius. I agree with you. I think it still remains to be seen how he will fare as a back end safety against a top echelon quarterback that targets that area of the field maybe more than Russell Wilson does.
Right.
But I think he certainly has utility as a nickelback and a backup safety. OTC currently values him at $2.2 million. I go up to maybe $3.5 million per year on a three-year deal. I just don't want to overpay, because I do think that the nickelback job, as we saw with Arthur Millett last year, it can be done. You can have good, high-quality play there for a low cap hit.
Okay. Yeah, I agree on that. And they'd really need to make sure what they're going to. Ardarius is one of a number of players that they would probably try and sign early, because they can allow him to just play out his contract either way. He'll be a Raven next year. But it might be a time where you could get him a little bit cheap, and it'd be kind of cool to do that.
As far as early extensions, just quick point. I believe that you want to sign early extensions on players that are on the upswing. So they're at on the trajectory about 70-80% of their maximum ability or performance, if you can. The players that are up in the 90, 95, 100, as good as they're ever going to be, they're already stars and studs. I think sometimes you have a better chance of saving money if you see if they can stay healthy for another year. We've seen it with Tavon Young. We've seen it with Ardarius Webb. We've seen it with Ronnie Stanley. A lot of players, for whatever reason, unfortunately, get injured right after early extensions in the last 10 years or so of this franchise.
Okay, well, let's talk about what that means, because Travis Jones would be a player I'd be advocating them to go to him at least with some sort of an offer and say, hey, look, you haven't been healthy the entire time, but what do you think about, you know, 3 years, $36 million tacked on to what you have next year? I've got to make him some sort of an offer, because one thing I really want is among Jones, Likely, Linderbaum, Washington, Fa'alele, Owe, and I'm probably forgetting someone, but among those guys, I think I'd make an offer to all of them, and it might be a little lowballish from some of their perspectives. Now, it might be Owe you can't get done at 3 years for whatever he wants, but you're putting deals out there hoping to get a couple assigned and save some money, have some divisible benefit. To the degree, I think you're pretty much are right on in terms of the guys who have extreme value, and Linderbaum may fall into this category. Yes. You won't get cheap. I don't know if Likely fits into that category right now, but
I don't think he does. He's been banged up a little bit and still splitting reps with Mark. To that point, I completely 1,000% agree with you on Travis Jones. He's exactly who I think is at the 80th percentile of his peak. Tyler Linderbaum, on the other hand, is probably right about close to 95th percentile of his peak. And at that point, I'd rather see him prove it and do it again for one more year before backing up the truck. But that's just a little strategic idea I had.
Interesting call there, because I think you probably do end up losing him. And you know, this year, they're going to have to make the decision on the 50-year option for him, which probably is going to be a no because of the it'd be at left tackle money. So you're committing to it only being one more year. Another reason why it's probably not a good idea to draft a center in the first round is just you don't have that friction from the 50-year option for a center the way you do at left tackle.
Agreed. Definitely agree with that. 100%.
All right. Let's see. We've got a couple more questions here. Kid Rock 20. Okay, guys, after 11 weeks, what's your ideal offensive line configuration? We haven't had questions about this recently.
I mean, I think the tackles are the tackles and the center is the center. The question is guard. McCary had a strong stretch of games and a little bit of a tough game against the Steelers. Fa'alele has been up and down and down and up and up and up and down a little bit. I still think Ben Cleveland, I would personally prefer Ben Cleveland to Fa'alele. I guess probably – they could probably make the switch at both guard spots if it were up to me, to be honest.
Okay. I think there are reasons to play Voorhees over McCary, but they are longer-term reasons and reasons other than the left guard play. I think McCary's actually been the better left guard this year, even with all the penalties, which is incredible because he's had 68% more penalties per snap than John Simpson did last year. You remember how much I whined about that. But anyway,
is it the scheme? Is it the scheme, Ken? It might be the scheme.
But let's say it's a cursed position, whatever you want to call it. If the Ravens were to draft a top left guard next year, I think that would be a good plan to go for an interior lineman. They probably are going to go for an interior lineman and a tackle again, I would think. But we'll see how that plays out. McCary's unsigned, of course, and he's another guy they'll have to figure out what they want to do with for next year.
Stanley, McCary, and Cleveland, all three are pending UFAs.
Yeah, good point. So that's a lot of overhaul set. They've been remarkably healthy on the line so far this year. You know, Voorhees did have an injury which forced McCary into the position. Then McCary kind of took it from him, but Voorhees is ready to come back. I did want to say the last little piece about Voorhees. McCary's outplayed him by a little bit this year, so it's not the play at left guard which should determine it, but it would be having McCary healthy for it as a tackle replacement would be one reason you'd want to do it.
Right.
And reason number two is that you want to see Voorhees' development. So you want to know what you have for 2025. And he's still early in his career. He doesn't have to be producing by now. It's the first of 4 years that the Ravens have him. But it would be nice if they understood exactly where they were progression-wise, if they understood where he fit relative to that expected curve of improvement.
Agreed.
All right, got one more here from Kid Rock 20. With the injury to Kane, will the Ravens fix the 4DL problem?
They better. To the next 2 weeks in a row, you got the Chargers, run-heavy team, and Philly. Saquon Barkley is performing very well, and they lost their center, Kelce, obviously, but they still have one of the top lines in the league. So I think you want to do as much as you can to alleviate snaps from Travis Jones and only use him in high-level situations until he is hopefully pretty close to 100% eventually.
Now, the Ravens will probably be favored in both of these games, particularly since they play the Eagles at home. Not 100% sure that'll be the true, but I think it will be the case. It would depend on some injuries that come out of the Chargers game, probably. They're favored by the Chargers on the road by 3. A lot of people are looking at this as saying, we got to win both of these games. I look at this and say, you know, there's definitely 3 outcomes here, and they can't afford to have both these games go red on them here. If they lose both of these games and drop to 7-6, all of a sudden the certainty that they'll make the playoffs will go away. Yeah, obviously, you want to win the division. You probably want to win both these games, but it would really be very bad if they lost them both.
Yes, well, certainly in the AFC game is more important. If you do go to a tiebreaker with Pittsburgh, they have the tiebreaker against Denver head-to-head, who's currently in 7. They swept Cincinnati, who's currently in 8th, I believe, and then Miami's in 9th, but they're still digging out of a hole. Am I missing somebody?
No, the big thing I want to point out is the Ravens are kind of beyond the point of no return with regard to beating anybody in a tiebreaker by conference record. It almost cannot happen. So all wins are approximately equal at this point. The Steelers, they have to beat by divisional record. Most of the other teams in the AFC, they need to beat by head to head. And there's almost nobody else they can beat by another way. And if you're interested in a little breakdown of that, one last thing this week is a look at the playoff situation and tiebreaker situation specifically for the Ravens. So that'll be up, I believe, on Saturday.
Look forward to it.
All right. Always a pleasure doing the show with you, Vas. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. And my pleasure doing the show with you, Ken. Look forward to continuing and looking forward to the remainder of the season. Heads up, chest out.
All right. Any new news on the restaurant?
We are working on the punch list for the health department inspection. So we're right on the precipice now.
Okay. Very good. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. I know you're some of our most loyal listeners, the folks that listen to this show. And please, if you would, just introduce one new person to this show. It's what I really am asking people to do this season. If you want to write a 5-star, 50-word review, that's great as well. But thanks very much for listening. For Vasilis Fiamata, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on One Last Thing.